Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Oregon will hold its primary election on May 19th. Oregonians will vote on positions including district attorneys, sheriffs, and judges, as well as ballot measures that are important for public safety reform. We'll talk about these races and COVID-19 in the prisons with my guests from Partnership for Safety and Justice and Safety and Justice Oregon. My guests are Shannon White, PSJ's Deputy Director, and Talia Gadd, Director of Communications. Welcome, Shannon, Talia.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Karen. It's good to be here.
Now, Shannon, we're in the midst of a pandemic, and you're managing to continue PSJ's work for public safety reform. So how are all of you at PSJ? Are you all staying safe and well?
Karen, thank you for asking. We are. We early on all started working from home. We're fortunate that our work lends itself to, if not perfectly, but actually we're able to do our work from home. And like everyone else, we are on perpetual Zoom calls, or at least everyone who's trying to work from home. So we feel fortunate that we have paychecks and are able to continue our advocacy during this time.
That's great news. So Shannon, we're hearing the news about coronavirus in the prisons and jails and how it's affecting both those incarcerated as well as corrections staff. So what can you share about the impact of the pandemic and about the work that's being done to protect those in our Oregon prisons and jails?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see the difference between the local response in the jails and the state prison system. It appears that counties, sheriff's departments have come together to quickly reduce the number of people in local jails. There's a recent report put out by Disability Rights Oregon that documents on average jail populations have reduced by 50%. And I think that is both really important and critical for the coronavirus, but also hopefully, and as the report points out, lets us know that we, as many of us know, are incarcerating way too many people, and actually we can do better and do our job differently without as many people in our jails. So that's been actually a point where we've seen real change happen, and it seems to be happening well and safely for everyone involved. At the state prison level, folks have probably heard there has just been absolutely no movement. The governor's office has not decided to release anyone to date that we know of, not even for the medically vulnerable. There has been a lot of pushback from some district attorneys that would be unsafe. We really believe there are safe and responsible ways to decrease the prison population, which could involve, you know, supported transition the same way we do every day. I mean, people are being released from prison all the time, and I think there are ways certainly to accelerate that the governor and Department of Corrections could work on. We have been advocating for that tirelessly since it started with many allies, and as yet, nothing's happened. And so, as could be anticipated, right now there is an outbreak at the Shutter Creek facility down in Coos County, where I think today there are 25 cases out of a total population of just over 300. You know, this is both concerning for the folks locked up there, the people who work there, and for the county and the community itself has been very concerned about having a prison where there is no social distancing. You know, social distancing is just not possible in a prison facility at the current population numbers. So it's very concerning. And I should say that, just want to acknowledge that so many people, I mean, PSJ, Partnership for Safety and Justice, but also the Oregon Justice Resource Center has filed a lawsuit. Everyone from the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers, ACLU sponsors a reentry program down in Salem, and many, many others have been really just advocating constantly to try and get movement at the state level. Many legislators, including the judiciary chairs, Representative Tana Sanchez, and actually now Representative Janelle Bynum and Senator Floyd Prozanski and others have been really instrumental in trying to push for early transition from prisons in a safe way for everyone. And still, we have nothing, but we will be continuing that advocacy and also asking for your listeners to join us in that. And we'll talk more about that.
Talia Gadd, now I know PSJ's holistic approach includes working with crime survivors. And there's been a lot of news about the increase in domestic violence as people shelter in place. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. One of the reasons why we talk about crime survivors really inherently in all of our work is because we know that there's not a binary between people who have caused harm and people who've experienced harm. What Shannon has talked about in terms of the impact of what people are experiencing in prisons, you know, being aware that people who are incarcerated have also themselves experienced violence in their lives. So that's one area in which it's sort of important to be aware of the impact of coronavirus on people who've survived harm. There's real deep impact in our communities and our neighborhoods in terms of coronavirus and public safety. And one of the most profound ways is just in the way that we hear people say, stay home, stay safe. And homes are not always safe for people. People in homes sometimes experience violence that is experienced by kids, by older people, and also intimate partner violence. For children, typically those who can identify child abuse are people who are around kids in schools, camps, after school programs, and kids are not seeing those mentors, or those mentors and community leaders are not around those kids. And so there's vulnerability there for children who are not coming into contact with people who would typically report concerns of abuse. For elder abuse and older people, there's the same kinds of vulnerabilities. Those experiences go unseen. And also for older people right now, they're also aware that the coronavirus, they're uniquely vulnerable to the impact of COVID-19. So that is kind of a multi-layered threat for people who may be experiencing elder abuse in their homes. And for intimate partner violence, for people experiencing domestic violence or family violence, you know, staying home full time now means that there are those circumstances at home that make you at potentially greater risk for harm and violence. And then we also, within all of those dynamics, there's all of these additional stressors around unemployment and the stress of trying to stay on top of kids' schooling and all of this uncertainty. It's just altogether creating really fertile ground for things to escalate. So it's a scary time for folks who are vulnerable in their homes. There are services that are available, but they're modified. Now, people are not going to hospitals to get the care that they need, but there are still resources. One of our community allies is an organization called Call to Safety. They primarily work with survivors who are experiencing intimate partner violence, but we would encourage anyone who's experiencing any vulnerabilities at home and violence at home to call to Safety. And they can also direct folks to another resource that may be more specific to their particular needs. And so I just want to share that number is 888-235-5333. Among the kinds of resources that people can get are still restraining orders. There are still advocates available to do safety planning to help people identify supports and resources that may be accessible to them. And so there are advocates available that are working with people who reach out. We know that calls are spiking, and our allies who are providing direct service to survivors are meeting those needs, including helping to identify emergency shelter services that are needed. There's an enormous win earlier this month or late in April for to support survivors that the Oregon legislature unanimously voted, the emergency board, I should say, unanimously voted to allocate $2 million for victim services and emergency shelter services for domestic and sexual violence survivors. So we, together with our allies, advocated really hard for that. Another area that we're working on and trying to elevate in terms of the vulnerabilities or the impacts on survivors of color. Nationally, we know that African American folks are experiencing rates of infection that are significantly higher. And Latinx people in Oregon are also experiencing coronavirus infection at a much higher rate. In Oregon, it's now 20 times more likely to experience infection of COVID-19. And that was actually just reported recently in the New York Times. So with the disparities of the virus and also a lack of, in some communities, culturally specific resources that serve crime survivors of color, we're just aware that there are some real gaps in our system that we're, you know, advocating to try to mitigate.
One thing I might add to that is just, it seems likely that, you know, the sort of local and national response to the coronavirus will be ongoing, that this, I think, was an unintended consequence and not really well planned for, and one that we're really going to have to think about moving forward. We also had heard from a national organization for the first time in their, I can't remember, 30-year history, the majority of their calls to their sort of domestic violence line came from people under the age of 18. So, you know, schools planned around not having lunches for kids, and we're trying to work that out. I don't think they planned around a real resource for young people when they're in abusive households is to talk to teachers and school counselors. And so this unintended consequence was not thought through and is something we're really going to have to think through moving forward as these closures continue to keep children and families safe when they're not having connections with the institutions that sometimes provided some of that safety.
Talia, that support number one more time.
Yes, absolutely. Call to Safety. Their phone number is 888-235-5333.
So people will vote on May 19th in Oregon's primary election. And Partnership for Safety and Justice has endorsed Metro's housing measure 26210. So why is housing such an important issue for public safety reform?
I actually wrote about a year ago about the intersection between housing, houselessness, homelessness, and public safety. And I asked around among our colleagues at Partnership for Safety and Justice. And out of the seven of us who worked there, four of us came from providing direct services to people who experience homelessness. It's actually a really dynamic and complex intersection. For crime survivors, when people are victims of crime, one common need is relocation. Whether their previous home was a site of violence, or sometimes there's someone still living there. Sometimes it might be that there is just a really significant trauma that took place right outside of your home. There could be a lot of reasons why it can feel so raw, so vulnerable, so traumatic to be in your home as a survivor of violence. And affordable housing and accessible housing is incredibly critical to help people start on the road to heal from trauma and to begin to rebuild their lives. Once survivors have access to stable housing, that's the time when other needs can be met, including ensuring children's safety, having a place to safely store your food, your medication. Just you can begin to check those other essential boxes, but without having housing security, that is one of the things that make people particularly vulnerable to crime and violence.
Yeah, I think for people who are caught up in the criminal justice system, housing is incredibly critical, both at the front end and the back end. I mean, when you think about this, a significant percentage of folks are getting arrested in Portland and are for crimes related to not having a place to live, right? Whether it's sleeping in public or using the bathroom in public, you know, trying to get your basic resources you need because you don't have a home, and services to just meet your basic needs. This measure, which provides $250 million a year in housing and other supportive services for the metro area, so it's a metro measure, tri-county area, is really going to be a game changer for not just providing more housing, but actually looking at the depth of the problem we have and trying to support people who need additional help to stay stable in housing. Many folks can be in their homes and take their mental health medication and things work out just fine. And everyone should have that right. We think that mental illness is driving people to the streets. Well, plenty of people are experiencing mental illness in their homes and going to work every day. We can support people to be successful with the right combination of services and housing, and that's what this measure seeks to do. and certainly on the back end of the criminal justice system for people coming out. I mean, you can just imagine trying to look for a job if you don't have a stable place to live, or you're living in a shelter with, you know, 50 to hundreds of other people who are keeping you up all night. People need to be clean. They need to be well rested. They need to have a stable address, like all of us who have homes count on every day. And so it's the kind of thing that just creates the stability many of us have the privilege to just take for granted. But folks who are coming out of prison wouldn't necessarily have that without the kinds of support that this measure would provide. So we are super excited about the opportunity. We have endorsed this measure, we're supporting it, and certainly hope folks will vote for it on May 19th.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. My guests are Shannon White and Talia Gadd with Partnership for Safety and Justice and Safety and Justice Oregon. And we're discussing the May election and COVID-19 in Oregon prisons. And you're also working on a statewide ballot measure. IP-44 is the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act that we hope will be on the November ballot. So talk about IP-44 and how people can help support this ballot measure.
Yeah, so IP-44 is really a groundbreaking measure that's not yet on the ballot. We do need signatures, so we can talk about that. But it would decriminalize possession of drugs and instead give people addiction treatment in their communities. We know that the war on drugs has been a disaster. It allocates millions of dollars to target people who use drugs or struggle with addiction, and it just wastes law enforcement resources, jail resources, and prison resources. So we are really excited to be part of this solution-based approach. And if it passes, Oregon will be the first state to decriminalize drug use in the US. Other countries have done it, but Oregon would be the first state. And it would invest millions of dollars into treatment instead of into criminalizing substance abuse and addiction or substance use. But it still needs to get on the ballot. And signature gathering in the age of COVID has become much more difficult, as everyone is familiar with. Usually people are out on street corners and at your grocery stores collecting signatures to get things on the ballot. That's no longer possible. So now folks can go online to yesonip44.org. That's yesonip44.org, and click on sign the petition, and you can print it out and then sign it. If you don't have a printer, you can just contact the campaign and they will mail you a hard copy. This is really important. We're close to having the signatures we need, but there's still several thousand to go to make sure it makes the ballot. So please, if you can, go to yesonip44.org and sign the petition.
I would like to add just an exclamation point to what Shannon said. I couldn't be more thrilled about IP-44 and its possibilities, not just for Oregon, but for the country. People throw around historic, this word historic. It is truly a historic opportunity, and I couldn't feel more excited, and I just can't urge people more strongly to please go to yesonip44.org. Please print the signature page to send it into the campaign. We are really just a few thousand votes away from this. And as someone who's personally experienced what addiction looks like and what criminalization of drugs looks like, I just know that a lot of people can relate to how urgent it is that we shift our approach to the war on drugs, which has just been a disaster, and be a part of the solution and help pass this really enormously important effort that will make an enormous difference in our own lives and in the lives of all Oregonians.
You are also working on candidate campaigns. Tell us about that work.
Yeah, this is a really exciting time for Safety and Justice Oregon and for Oregon in general. There are a number of public safety measures on this May 19th ballot. And I don't think most people know that there are measures and races that can get decided on May 19th, which is unusual, right? Primaries are usually before the November election, but there are sheriffs, DAs, there's a jail measure down in Jackson County, judicial races. It's exciting that there's so much on the ballot and that people are running for these offices, you know, particularly around district attorneys and sheriffs, judges as well. There often aren't contested races. So we're excited that people are stepping up into these positions and want to provide, I think, transformation of systems that we know are not being as effective as they should. There are two district attorney races that Safety and Justice Oregon is active in and very excited about. The first is the Multnomah County race for district attorney. Again, I just want to emphasize this race will be decided on May 19th, so please vote. And we hope that you will vote for Mike Schmidt. Mike Schmidt is currently the head of a state agency called the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. And we have worked with him for years on different criminal justice reforms. And he just has the experience and skills necessary to be a great leader for Oregon. He has demonstrated a commitment, not just in words, but in action, and an ability to bring together, you know, certainly us, racial justice advocates, the ACLU, and sheriffs and DAs to move reforms forward. Now, often the DAs actually don't end up moving forward on some of it, but and I think he's going to be able to provide that kind of leadership in Multnomah County and be a real game changer because he understands the system, he understands the data, and he knows that he's accountable to a large group of stakeholders, and that's the work he's been doing. So I think, you know, one of the things that's really apparent in this moment is how important leadership is and really not just having the viewpoints you might support in a candidate, but actually that candidate having the skills necessary to do the job well. And Mike not only shares the values of Safety and Justice Oregon, he understands mass incarceration, he understands racial disparities, he understands that crime victims deserve to be treated with respect, even if they don't want to prosecute a case. These are the things that really can be transformative in Oregon, and he has proven his commitment to that and his ability to move policy. So this is a unique opportunity to support someone who is a demonstrated leader and change maker, which again, I just think is unusual. We often have people who talk a good game, but they may not have any idea how to do it. And we know he has the right values and knows how to make things happen.
And Shannon, there's also a district attorney election in Wasco County.
Yes. And that is great news because the district attorney out there has been opposed to reforms for many years. He was also recently suspended by the bar, which is the licensing agency for attorneys, for lying, and which is a pretty extreme measure. And this local criminal defense lawyer, Matt Ellis, is running really because many people who work out there in government and locally have asked him to run. They need someone other than the incumbent in office because he is not a good partner in the work they're trying to do. He has broad range of support and a lot of integrity. And so we are really excited about his race as well. I don't know if there are listeners out in Wasco County, but if so, check out Matt Ellis. He is a strong candidate and much needed change out in Wasco County, where I think, you know, there's been a lot of activism, particularly from like Rural Organizing Project around their detention facility out there. This is a place where some new law enforcement leadership is really needed, and Matt is ready to take on that challenge and work with all the stakeholders to create better outcomes out there.
And there's also sheriffs and judicial races. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, there are a range of them across the state. Those are not races where Safety and Justice Oregon is endorsed. We just really want to encourage people to research people in their counties as much as possible and make sure that those candidates are thinking about equity. Like if there are people out there who have websites that don't talk about racial disparities in the justice system, they're probably not your candidate, right? If people don't understand that there are too many people locked up, that's not a great candidate. If they don't understand that addiction is a health issue, not a criminal justice issue, that's not a great candidate. So again, we aren't offering advice on those races, but we really want to encourage people to do your research. Hopefully, if you have access to a computer or online resource at home, to really look at these races because leadership matters and we need change around our criminal justice system in Oregon, and we can't get it without everyone really taking time to look at who these candidates are and getting us the best leadership we can.
And Shannon, one more time, why is this May primary election so important?
Right. So many of these races, the DA races, the judicial race, and the housing measure are all going to be decided on May 19th. And the reason that is because these are, in the candidate races, they are nonpartisan races. So as long as there are only two candidates in the race, or one of the candidates gets more than 50% of the vote, there's no runoff. So these actual races, and certainly the Wasco County DA race and the Multnomah County DA race, will be decided on May 19th. You will not have another vote to make on November on those races. So these races are incredibly important and hard, because I don't think it's widely spread information that, deciding votes will be made on May 19th. So we really wanted to emphasize that, because there's no reason people would know that. It's just not usual information.
So we've covered quite a few issues here. So Shannon, can you just give a recap of what we've discussed and how people can get involved?
Yeah, so there's a lot people can do right now. So one, we would encourage you to go to Partnership for Safety and Justice website and click on our Take Action button. That is to advocate for folks who are locked up and to push the legislators and the governor to take action for early transition. So please, again, go to safetyandjustice.org and click on our Take Action button. The other thing that Talia mentioned is help us get IP44 on the ballot in November. So go to yesonip44.org and download that signature page, and please sign it and mail it in to add your signature so we can get this on the ballot. Third, please vote yes on the housing measure, which is 26-210. It's the Here Together campaign. Again, 26-210. Find that on your ballot. And finally, if you live in Wasco or Multnomah County, you have two great candidates for district attorney, Mike Schmidt in Multnomah County and Matt Ellis in Wasco County. So please vote for them if you live there, or if you have friends in either of those counties, please encourage them to do so as well.
And Talia, the domestic violence hotline?
Yes, for people who are seeking support, I encourage folks again to call to safety at 888-235-5333. And just one last thing before we sign off, we're really hoping everyone's staying well and healthy and safe.
I want to thank my guests, Shannon White and Talia Gadd with Partnership for Safety and Justice and Safety and Justice Oregon. Thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline.
Karen, thank you so much for having us. It was really our pleasure to be able to talk with you and your listeners. Hope everyone is well.
To all our listeners, please stay safe and be well. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our KBOO engineer, and thank you for listening.